Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. We are 9 minutes after 6 o'clock. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And obviously, news coming out of Ukraine. It is Saturday afternoon across Ukraine. And some of the developments overnight. The president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, is calling for peace talks with Russia without delay. It was a video address the Ukrainian president made. He said, quote, meaningful, fair peace talks were needed urgently. He has warned Moscow that Russian losses will otherwise be so huge it will take generations to recover. This is the president speaking through a translator.
I want everyone to hear me now. Especially, I want them to hear me in Moscow. It's time to meet. Time to talk. Time to restore territorial integrity and justice for Ukraine, or else Russia will face such losses that several generations will not be enough for it to rise back up.
On Friday, fighting reached the center of the city of Mariupol. 350,000 civilians have been stranded with little food or water. The Russian Defense Ministry said its forces were, quote, tightening the noose around that port city, and the, quote, fighting against nationalists was taking place in the city center. Mariupol's mayor appeared to confirm that claim of the Russians. In another claim from Russia, they say they have used hypersonic weapons. Of course, those are the missiles that travel so fast they can evade detection by missile defense systems. They say they used the hypersonic weapon to destroy an underground military depot in western Ukraine. That claim has not been verified. Ukraine's defense ministry said it had temporarily lost access to the Azov Sea, which opens to the Black Sea and would be a major blow for Ukraine. The Ukraine Defense Ministry also is now claiming that 14,000 Russian troops have been killed. That has not been confirmed. You may have seen the images of that Russian airstrike on the theater in Mariupol that had been sheltering hundreds of civilians. More than 130 people have been rescued. In the early hours this morning, President Zelensky said there was no new information regarding fatalities. He said the city was experiencing, quote, the greatest ordeal in its history, in the history of Ukraine. And there were also reports on Friday of mass casualties after a missile attack on a Ukrainian army barracks in the southern area of Ukraine. There have been 816 confirmed civilian deaths. That from the United Nations, 222 people killed in the capital, including 60 civilians and 4 children. Turning to the discussion between the United States and China, the president described the implications for Beijing in a call that President Biden had with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping on Friday. Now, a White House official told reporters that President Biden described the implications for Beijing if it decides to provide assistance to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The official called the conversation, quote, direct, substantive, detailed, and candid, but would not describe what the implications were. The official said, quote, I'm not going to publicly lay out our options from here. This was really about President Biden being able to lay out very clear in substantial detail with a lot of facts, walking the Chinese president through the situation. That official declined to describe President Xi's reaction to the discussion. Here's how Jen Psaki summed it up. We have a couple of highlights from her comments in the White House briefing room.
The call was not about making asks. It wasn't about making assessments. It was about having an ongoing discussion and dialogue about the illegal invasion or the invasion of Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. It's going to be up to President Xi and the Chinese to determine what role they're going to play moving forward. China has to make a decision for themselves about where they want to stand and how they want the history books to look at them and view their actions. And that is a decision for President Xi and the Chinese to make.
So that's a sense of that conversation that was held yesterday between the Chinese leader and President Biden. Big story that has been breaking, we're going to get into after the traffic and weather, and that is, of course, Hunter Biden's laptop. And we want to spend a few minutes on it this morning because most of the major media outlets buried that story for the past couple of years, including during the campaign. And we're going to get into some of the details that are coming out there. Coming up on the show this morning, obviously, we'll be talking to our experts. Katie McFarland will join us later on. We'll get her latest read on how the United States is faring diplomatically against Russia, against China, and uniting NATO. We'll be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We'll get into some of the details of the assistance that the United States will be providing to Ukraine. $800 million approved to go to Ukraine, and that was after President Zelensky's speech to the Congress earlier this week. We'll ask Tony about that. We'll get Tony's read on the progress or lack of progress from the Russian military. That's coming up in the 7 o'clock hour this morning. We'll be joined by Cheryl Atkinson, and when we check in with Cheryl this morning, we've got some interesting details on oil. You know, this effort to get oil out of the Mideast because we won't let ourselves pump oil here. And for the first year, the Biden administration declared war on the oil industry during the campaign. And so where are we turning for oil? The Mideast? Well, there is some place closer besides the U.S., and Cheryl will enlighten us on that topic coming up this morning. John Gizzi will be with us, and we'll take a look at President Zelensky and President Putin, how they're doing with their respective citizens in each of their countries. President Putin speaking to almost 200,000 people in Moscow's largest stadium yesterday, a fairly brief speech, got even shorter when Russian TV quote-unquote accidentally pulled it off the air. They put it back on and played it in its entirety. But President Putin attempting to rally his citizenry, as we've seen a number of anti-war protests across Russia. And we'll be talking with John Gizzi about that this morning. Also, there is a new president in South Korea. What does that mean for the relationship between the North and South in Korea? And what does it mean for our interests in that region? We'll ask John about that this morning as well. Jim Trusty is going to be joining us, and he'll look into the legal aspects of the Hunter Biden developments this week, the laptop, the investigation, and where that may go next. Also, you may have heard by now that Jussie Smollett, who had been convicted and sentenced to 150 days in jail, got out within a few days, and he's out on personal recognizance bond, is how it was described, but it also comes with a $100,000 price tag on that bond. He's out until an appeals court can decide his fate, and that's coming up with Jim Trusty. We'll get into the details of what went down there, and Jennifer Harper just around the corner, and we're going to be taking a look at some of the interesting poll numbers that are out there this morning, and a look at developments in Ukraine as well. So do stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update. Right now, let's check the traffic and weather, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
It's good morning on the Beltway in Maryland, both in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. I don't have any reports of any crashes or construction. If you're traveling between the two Beltways in Prince George's County, either on the BW Parkway or 95, you can set your cruise control lanes to clear both northbound and southbound. Route 50 in Prince George's County from the Beltway to the Bay Bridge, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And in the city, 295, 395, and 695, all three, all lanes are clear. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning, a chance for a couple of isolated showers across the region. But as we head towards the afternoon, skies will clear, temperatures warm into the mid and upper 70s ahead of a cold front that'll shift through later on this afternoon and evening. There are a chance for a couple of storms later on this evening, closer to sunset. A few of those could be on the stronger side, something Stormwatch 7 will be watching very closely. Later on tonight, 40s and 50s across the region under mostly clear skies will be partly sunny to at times mostly cloudy on your Sunday. A little bit more cooler, but also seasonably so. High temperatures tomorrow around 60 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
59 degrees in the nation's capital, 619 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
You may recall back in the campaign in 2020, the New York Post had broken a story about a laptop that allegedly belonged to Hunter Biden. And about the same time, one of the Biden associates, Tony Bobulinski, came out and verified some of the things that were in the laptop and was very open to the press, did media briefings, did a press conference, and was very available. But apparently, nobody besides conservative talk media, including the Fox News Channel and, of course, the New York Post, nobody else would report it. In fact, Twitter pulled the New York Post off of Twitter when they were reporting the story. Well, a Wednesday report by the New York Times confirmed the authenticity of Hunter Biden's infamous laptop. Of course, it was left in a Delaware repair shop in 2019 before it was turned over to the FBI by the repair shop owner because of some of the things that were on the computer that were very troubling to him. Now, the New York Times report focused on the investigation into Hunter Biden's taxes and his international business dealings. The New York Times report notes that prosecutors had examined emails between Biden and some business associates that, quote, appear to have come from a laptop abandoned by Mr. Biden in a Delaware repair shop and were, quote, authenticated by people with them and with the investigation. Now, you recall, the New York Times and everybody in the mainstream media and our current president dismissed the Biden laptop story as Russian disinformation. And you may recall this one during the campaign and the debate.
There are 50 former national intelligence folks who said that what this he's accusing me of is a Russian plant. They have said that this is has all the care. Five former heads of the CIA, both parties, say what he's saying is a bunch of garbage. Nobody believes it except his and his good friend Rudy Giuliani.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax?
That's exactly where he's going.
The laptop is Russia, yes. Russia,
Gentlemen,
Russia?
I want to stay on the issue of race.
You
okay?
have to be kidding. Here
Mr.
we go
President?
Again with Russia.
We all recall that. Well, the former president had that right, and the current president, what do we want to call it, Biden misinformation, maybe? It's a new term. We should coin that one. How about it? Because there's plenty of it coming out of the administration and plenty of it coming out of the White House. There was a whole fall full of it during that presidential campaign when nobody would look at the story because it was being dismissed as Russian disinformation. Well, we're going to see where that goes, and especially we'll be talking with Jim Trusty, our legal expert. He was at the Department of Justice and knows all about how these types of investigations are handled. There hasn't been very much coming out at all from any of the law enforcement sources. So we'll see where the reporting goes. And interesting that the State Department is involved in this now, some emails there. And we're going to talk about that next. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll get into some of the further revelations in the Hunter Biden laptop story that came out this week. You are listening to the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And another development on the Hunter Biden story, the U.S. Department of State now says it will hand over email records mentioning Hunter Biden to the New York Times after the publication had sued the federal government to get those emails. In a court filing on Friday, David McCraw, a lawyer representing the New York Times, wrote that the State Department had begun identifying records that the Times had requested through the Freedom of Information Act, of course known as FOIA. It did agree to give them to the Times starting in April. McGraw wrote in a letter to the judge overseeing the lawsuit that the State Department has, quote, started identifying records responsive to the Times FOIA request. It has agreed to begin processing records for production as it continues to identify the remaining responsive records. Now, the Times had sued the State Department in January, alleging that the agency had failed to respond in a timely manner to two FOIA requests. Kenneth Vogel, a journalist for The Times, had requested copies of email correspondence between August of 2015 and December of 2019. Those emails between officials in the U.S. Embassy and Romania that mentioned Hunter Biden. the son of President Joe Biden and, of course, Vice President Biden at the time. Vogel also asked for records mentioning Tony Bobulinski. Of course, we mentioned him earlier, a former associate of Hunter Biden in their business dealings, and Louis Free, the former FBI director, who reportedly gave Biden a $100,000 gift. The Times alleging that the State Department violated the law by failing to communicate about the records request in a timely manner. The agency told the New York Times that it would begin to produce those documents for Vogel's request in April of this year. We will see how this plays out. It is 6:29. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, Ukraine's deputy prime minister says 10 humanitarian corridors have been agreed on with the Russians. They include a corridor from the besieged port city of Mariupol, several in the Kyiv region, and several in the Luhansk region. She also announced plans today to deliver humanitarian aid to the city of Kherson, which is currently under control of the Russian forces. About three dozen would-be asylum seekers from Russia were blocked from entering the U.S. while a group of Ukrainians flashed passports and were escorted across the border. That scene yesterday, reflecting a quiet but unmistakable shift in the treatment of Russians and Ukrainians who enter Mexico as tourists and others fly to Tijuana, hoping to enter the U.S. for a chance at asylum. A U.S. Homeland Security Department memo tells border officials that Ukrainians may be exempt from sweeping asylum limits designed to prevent the spread of COVID-19. It makes no mentions of Russians. China's national health authorities have reported two COVID-19 deaths, the first recorded rise in the death toll since January of 2021, China battling an Omicron-driven surge. Those deaths reported today in the northeastern province of China brings the country's coronavirus death toll to 4,638, according to Chinese officials. And Don Young, who was the longest-serving Republican in the history of the U.S. House, has passed away. He was 88. Young, who was first elected in the House in 1973, was known for his brusque style. During his 2014 election bid, he described himself as intense and less than perfect, but said he wouldn't stop fighting for Alaska. Don Young, dead at 88. 6:33 on the Saturday Morning Update. Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Maryland's side of the Beltway right now is clear both in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270 southbound at Gaithersburg, there is construction. Two lanes are blocked right at 370. Between the two beltways in Prince George's County, on the BW Parkway in 95, no delays have been reported there. And in Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're at speed both on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. A chance for a couple of isolated showers across the region. But as we head towards the afternoon, skies will clear. Temperatures warm into the mid and upper 70s ahead of a cold front. They'll shift through later on this afternoon and evening. There are a chance for a couple of storms later on this evening, closer to sunset. A few of those could be on the stronger side, something Stormwatch 7 will be watching very closely. Later on tonight, 40s and 50s across the region under mostly clear skies. Will be partly sunny to at times mostly cloudy on your Sunday. A little bit more cooler, but also seasonably so. High temperatures tomorrow around 60 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 59 degrees, 6:34 in the nation's capital. The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Always a pleasure to be joined by Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
It hasn't taken a very long time for a book to come out on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Tell us about it.
Yes, indeed. We do have a book coming out on him, and it's called Zelensky, the Unlikely Hero Who Defied Putin and United the World. And this is going to be a whole emphasis on Zelensky's rapid rise on the world stage and also his place in history. And this is coming from Regnery Books. A lot of folks know Al Regnery, the publisher, but Regnery Books is coming out with this new book. And very quickly, they're saying from the most famous comedic actor in Ukraine to the most famous political hero in the world today, this president became the unlikely hero of our time. He led and inspired his country and the entire free world in the fight against the Russian invasion that began in February 2022, as we all know. But anyway, they're saying it's intended as a very concise profile of the man who became the leader, who captured headlines and won hearts worldwide. And the authors are Andrew Urban and Chris McLeod. And the book will also feature a foreword written by Rebecca Koffler. And she is actually the author of Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. So anyway, this book is coming out on April the 19th. That's how quickly they're working on this. Again, it's called Zelensky, the Unlikely Hero Who Defied Putin and United the World, from Regnery Books.
While we're talking about the bookshelves, I understand the Republican National Committee has their own version of Oprah's Book Club. But this one, they only have one person in mind that they want to read the book.
Yes, indeed. I really like this. It brought a little smile to my face. Anyway, this came from the Republican National Committee, and they have a special reading recommendation for President Biden. You know, he's navigating a lot of complex situations. And they were on President Biden. This is coming from Tommy Pickett. He is the Rapid Response Director for the RNC. And he says, why does President Biden seem so determined to give terrorists money? Not only is he letting Russia and China broker the flawed deal he is desperately trying to restart with the terrorist-funding Iranian regime, he is reportedly considering giving our adversary unreal concessions, removing the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps from the terror blacklist, is reportedly under consideration. And he points out that the Biden administration is reportedly not even demanding Iran stop targeting U.S. troops, and Russia's state-owned energy company is poised to cash in on a $10 billion nuclear contract in Iran. Anyway, he goes on and on about this. And here's what he has to say. Can somebody please send Mr. Biden a copy of The Art of the Deal? Now, a lot of folks will know.
Ouch.
The Art of the Deal was written by the one and only Donald Trump in 1987, was published by Random House, and at the time, the New York Times said, Trump makes one believe for a moment in the American dream again. So the RNC is hoping that Biden pick up a copy of The Art of the Deal.
We've certainly heard a lot about World War III in the media recently. You've been tracking it. What are you finding?
Well, brother, yes, we do have the whole mention of World War III has been thrown around all week, so I had to do a study of some of the headlines that came out this week, and here we go. Here's a couple of them. Why Putin's nuclear threat could be more than bluster, that came from Washington Post. A hard look at the risk of a Putin-ordered tactical nuke, that was National Review. Ukraine war, could Russia use tactical nuclear weapons? That came from BBC. Putin's nuclear threats are a wake-up call for the world. That came from The Atlantic. And let's just do two more. I got a whole bunch of them. But wild Kremlin TV host threatened the U.S. with nuclear strikes. That came from The Daily Beast. And Putin plays his nicely get-out-of-jail-free card. That came from The Wall Street Journal. But anyway, doomsday threat was definitely thrown around this week. And I kind of hope it goes away out of the press for a while.
We don't hear too much about the Second World War these days, but you have an article that shows that there is a relationship, at least in one capacity, to the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, this is just such an interesting story, and I hope all of you are aware of the OSS Society. This is a nonprofit organization, and they are honoring the legacy of the Office of Strategic Services. That is the OSS. That was a World War II predecessor of the CIA, also the U.S. Special Operations Command, and the U.S. State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research. And way back when, 1944, they issued something called the Simple Sabotage Field Manual, 23 pages long for its clandestine personnel back then. It emphasized the importance of citizen saboteurs, and they taught them to use everyday items and acts of simple sabotage to undermine the enemy, who were at the time Nazis. And the president of the OSS Society, that's Charles Pink, he had this manual translated into Ukrainian. And somehow we I didn't ask how, but it has made its way over to the Ukraine. And this is what he tells me. He said, we have received a lot of positive feedback about translating the OSS Simple Sabotage Manual into Ukrainian. It's been widely disseminated within Ukraine. We hope it will help the Ukrainian resistance defeat the Russians. Again, that's coming from Charles Pink. He's with the OSS Society. If you're curious about it, it's a very interesting group. You can go to osssociety.org. And I do believe that Mr. Pink has an article there explaining how they did this. And I believe there's a link to the actual manual there at osssociety.org.
You mentioned earlier a suggestion that President Biden might want to read the former president's book, The Art of the Deal. Well, it's too bad the president didn't make notes on the art of securing the border.
Yeah, well, the report this week is not very very promising on the southern U.S. border. There were some new numbers that came out this week from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And they report that 164,973 illegal immigrants were apprehended crossing the border in February, only in February. This is what our friends over at the Republican National Committee took an analysis of this. They said more than 2 million illegal immigrants have been caught attempting to cross the border since Biden took office. Additionally, more than 500,000 illegal immigrants have disappeared into the U.S. during Biden's border crisis. And also, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection revealed that the number of encounters from all the folks who would like to be citizens here from fiscal year 2022 to date through February now stands at 967,743. And the RNC is calling the Biden's border crisis is out of control. And actually, that's coming from RNC Chairman Rona McDaniel. She says Joe Biden and Democrats' reckless open border agenda created this crisis. American families are paying the price with more violent crime, dangerous drugs, and millions of illegal immigrants crossing the southern border. So people are still keeping track of the border, and stuff is still going on down there.
I know you often feature special real estate around the country, special properties for sale. I'm not sure that I ever thought about purchasing a home because of what I might find in the garage, but this is an exception.
Well, this is a part of my weekly weekend real estate that I feature every Friday, and we have NASCAR champ Tony Stewart's Hidden Hollow Ranch. This was built out of lodgepole pine in 2011 on 415 wooded acres in Columbus, Ohio. Comes complete with a 9-acre lake, 6 bedrooms, 8 baths, rustic luxury, and historic details are throughout. It has a 2-story interior waterfall, an 8,700-gallon aquarium, a commercial-grade kitchen. The house totals 19,714 square feet. There's a bowling alley, a guest house, a workshop, lots of wildlife, much, much more. And, of course, priced at $30 million. That's coming from Compass Realty. But today you can go look at it. Great website. It's called tourhiddenhollow.com. Again, that's tourhiddenhollow.com for anybody that's in the mood for some armchair real estate.
Well, since it's a NASCAR champion's home, really be interested to see how much horsepower comes in that garage. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. As always, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Rick, and have a good weekend, everybody.
And you too. It is 6:44. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAO. We'll talk with Jim Trusty next. We've got John Gizzi coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll take a look at Vladimir Putin and President Zelensky, their respective efforts to solidify their support amongst the people of Russia and, of course, the people of Ukraine in the conflict as it continues into day 24 this weekend. Also, we'll talk with KT McFarland and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer on the Russia invasion. And Cheryl Atkinson will join us, and we'll be talking oil prices with Cheryl Atkinson. So stay with us on the Saturday morning update. Jim Trustees next. We'll be talking about that Jussie Smollett appeal. In the Jussie Smollett case, an appeal, and he's out. Why? How? That's next. And also, Jim Trusty's read on Hunter Biden, the laptop story. It's all coming up. Stay with us right now. Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Traveling around the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland, you're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Maryland, on 270 southbound at Gaithersburg, there is construction. Two lanes are blocked right at 370. In Prince George's County, between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, I don't have any reports of any delays there. 66 in Fairfax County, you're at speed. And at 95 in Virginia, between the beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are open northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. A chance for a couple of isolated showers across the region. But as we head towards the afternoon, skies will clear. Temperatures warm into the mid and upper 70s ahead of a cold front. They'll shift through later on this afternoon and evening. There are a chance for a couple of storms later on this evening, closer to sunset. A few of those could be on the stronger side, something Stormwatch 7 will be watching very closely. Later on tonight, 40s and 50s across the region under mostly clear skies. Will be partly sunny to at times mostly cloudy on your Sunday. A little bit more cooler, but also seasonably so. High temperatures tomorrow around 60 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
59 degrees, 647 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
The latest news and information sent straight to your inbox with the WMAL newsletter.
Register today at WMAL.com/email.
We continue on the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jussie Smollett sentenced to 150 days in jail in Chicago, and within the first few days, he's out. It was a decision by the Illinois Appeals Court, and tell us about what happened.
Yeah, it's being misreported in a lot of circles, so the story is definitely not over yet. But what happened was the Illinois Appellate Court gave him what's called a stay of the sentence. And it doesn't mean he's done. It doesn't mean he won't go back to jail. But in a 2-1 opinion of three judges, they said that they thought because it was a nonviolent crime and because it would take a while for the appeal to actually be heard, that he should be released. In other words, he'd have this Pyrrhic victory of perhaps winning on appeal after serving 150 days in jail. So the case goes up on the merits of the appeal right now, but he gets to sit on the sidelines until it is resolved.
Is there a likelihood that his sentence would be reduced or even play out in home confinement as a result of this, or do we go back to that 150-day sentence if they turn down his appeal?
No, it's the latter. You know, the appeal is kind of a thumbs up or a thumbs down. He's either going to have the convictions upheld and have the sentence at 150 days, or the case will be reversed on some sort of legal grounds we don't know yet, and the entire conviction goes. And so, again, a lot of times on a stay, the court has to make a finding that there's a likelihood that he's going to win on appeal if they're going to grant the stay. Here, it was a one-page opinion. It literally just seems to say, hey, 150 days, he'll have served the sentence, let's let him out. I mean, a very kind of non-legal type ruling, but one that allows him to be out in the community until they resolve it, which presumably would be 6 to 9 months from now.
Changing topics, a Wednesday report by the New York Times confirmed the authenticity of Hunter Biden's infamous laptop. Of course, we all recall it was left in a Delaware repair shop in 2019 by the first son. It was turned over to the FBI, and most of the major media outlets neglected to report any of it. What do we know about the revelations from the New York Times and what it means for Hunter Biden?
Well, I think we know, for one thing, that neglected is a very generous way to put it. I mean, this story was actively suppressed, but the New York Times has a lot going on all of a sudden about Hunter Biden. The first thing is they filed a lawsuit against the State Department earlier this year, basically saying they had filed two different FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests. The first one was asking for emails between 2015 and 19 between U.S. embassy officials in Romania that were talking about Hunter Biden. I have no idea where that one's going, but clearly that's a targeted request where the New York Times had some information that they were chasing down about Hunter Biden being described or discussed by embassy personnel in Romania. So that's a real interesting one, very narrow category. The other FOIA request was much broader and touches on some names that we've seen over the last couple of years when there have been reports about Hunter's China, Russia, Kazakhstan, Ukrainian context. The first was looking for records relating to Tony Bobulinski. You remember, that's the man that came out and basically announced that Hunter Biden was completely corrupt, that he knew it because he was a business associate, and he was backed up with emails like the one referring to kicking 10% up to the big guy, which is apparently our current president of the United States. There was also a request for records from Louis Free, the former FBI director, who was implicated in some emails, apparently giving the Biden family a $100,000 gift. And then they asked for emails or communications relating to Rudy Giuliani, who, of course, had a presence in Eastern Europe, including the Ukraine, during the election season. And finally, Devin Archer, who is a friend of Hunter Biden, who recently got sentenced to a year in prison on a fraud scheme. Those are the big names, and there's a host of other names. And essentially, all of this has finally gone to court, with State Department clearly dragging its feet, which is not unusual when it comes to FOIA requests. And the court, at the last minute, has basically said, I'm going to step out of the way because I'm hearing from both parties that State Department is going to start issuing some of these documents or these responsive documents in April of this year. So might take a little while. I still don't think State Department's moving with exactly breakneck speed. But the New York Times has finally pursued these FOIA requests in court, and they're going to start getting documents next month. So we'll see if they let the story see some sunshine.
Typically, the law enforcement agencies do not release information on these types of things. But from what you're hearing and from what you know from your past experience, what do you sense is going on around Hunter Biden right now in terms of investigations?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I mean, certainly the Delaware U.S. Attorney's Office has at least a piece of an investigation, if not the whole investigation, into Hunter Biden. The U.S. Attorney is a holdover from the Trump administration, and that literally only happens in the rarest of circumstances, but typically, as is here, when they have a sensitive investigation where it would look like a conflict of interest or look bad for the president to force that U.S. Attorney out. So the Delaware U.S. Attorney has a case. We believe pretty firmly now there is this laptop that was left at a repair shop that's loaded with information that might cover things from the no-show job in the Ukraine with Burisma Oil to business deals with China to payments from Russian oligarchs, all sorts of stuff. There's even rumors of worse things on that laptop that could independently create criminal liability. But basically, the last thing we've heard publicly was Hunter Biden's attorneys right around election season saying that Hunter might have some sort of tax problem. Well, you know, that's a little bit like saying Hannibal Lecter has an eating disorder. It's probably a massive understatement or a trial balloon, and it may be a very optimistic way for the attorneys to look at Hunter Biden. The rumors are that there's potential federal offenses that would make sense in the foreign context, such as the Foreign Agent Registration Act, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, bribery, money laundering. I mean, all sorts of offenses are in play. And so they're a lot more serious than a tax problem. And where I think this leaves me, and I'm surprised it's gone on as long as it's gone on, Rick, but where I think we're heading is a really big integrity test for the U.S. Attorney in Delaware and for his boss, the Attorney General Merrick Garland, because – yeah, this is the president's son. These are not laughable, minimal Billy Carter kind of missteps. These are huge issues of potential compromising of the presidency and of a family member of the president. And it doesn't take this long to analyze his laptop. They've had that laptop for a couple of years. So I think there's negotiations going on behind the scenes where the defense attorneys in the Department of Justice, all the way to the highest reaches, are talking about the evidence, are pushing their positions, and I think we're going to have to hear a decision borne out by either an indictment or a plea agreement in the relative near future. So interesting times, overdue for some public acknowledgement of these investigations, but if there is a serious indictment that comes, it will reflect that they were not able, the defense attorneys were not able to persuade Delaware prosecutors and the FBI to treat this as a small thing like a tax matter, and that there's much more at stake.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law, thank you for the insight. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
And, of course, you can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. 7 o'clock news coming up with Heather Curtis. Then we are back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkison, Tony Schaefer, and Katie McFarland. Stay with us. Got a quick note here that might save you a little headache and worry over the weekend. If you have an iPhone and you find the battery's going down faster than it was last week, well, Apple rolled out a new operating system. It's the iOS 15.4, and there are a lot of reports on Twitter and in some of the tech trades that the update has new features, but along with the features, some users are running into issues after updating, including the battery drain. So if you find that your iPhone is going down faster than it was before, it might not be your battery. It might be that brand new iOS 15.4. Keep that in mind. It is 7 o'clock. Heather Curtis has got the news here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.